Why were we so easily persuaded of our own inadequacy? Who was setting the agenda? Why, for decades and even now, has virtually every cultural product been so insistently oriented around male desire and male pleasure?
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that brings you all of the updates on Book Talk's most popular and talked about books and tells you whether or not you should take time out of your busy schedule to read them. I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Caitlin. And we are doing a nonfiction book, like our one a year that we tend to get to.
We're doing more than one this year.
This is our first, it's our first one in a while. This one is called Girl on Girl. The subtitle is How Pop Culture Turned a Generation of Women Against Themselves. And that's pretty much what it's about. It goes through kind of decades from like the 90s on, and also like cultural pieces. So it kind of talks music, TV, movies, pornography even, and how all of that shaped our culture to keep putting women in the backseat.
Yeah.
And there's no spoilers. You lived through it.
If you are Gen Z or millennial, you live through this.
Yeah, you'll remember.
It's definitely way more targeted towards elder millennials. Like, I'm almost too young for a lot of the references. But you'll recognize everything.
Right.
Most everything.
Yeah. Like, the older parts, I was definitely not aware of. But the more... She starts in the 90s and backs her way into like the 2015 era. So,
and also there's like art, fashion, all is kind of mingled in here in a sort of chronological but sort of sectional order.
Yeah.
It even ends with like MLMs.
It does.
The Lula Rich. That was a great documentary.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway,
let's bring reviews from the internet.
Yeah, so this is a 2-star review that made me giggle because it kind of was exactly how I felt about this book a bit. And it says, okay, fine, I'll watch Girls.
There was a whole chapter basically about Lena Dunham.
Yeah, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is so much Lena Dunham.
Yeah, that is also actually how I felt. Okay, I got a 4-star review. The reviews of this book are not funny, as you might expect, about what is basically a cultural, anthropological look at pop culture. So I found one that I thought just sort of summarized my thoughts. So 4 stars. This is like the perfect nonfiction book to recommend to a white liberal millennial woman. Not even because it's inherently bad, but because it just doesn't push very hard against anything. It sort of regurgitates a lot of things you probably know about feminism in the 2000s, especially if you lived it, which feels validating for sure and a little painful to relive also. I can't decide if the fact that the book, that so much of pop culture examined in this book is white, is indicative of the 90s and 2000s era, or if it's a huge flaw in the book. Maybe I just wanted it to be a little bit more intersectional. At times, it didn't feel like too much of a flaw, and then she'd launch into a long bit about Hillary Clinton, and I'd begin to think, am I too leftist for this conversation? Also, it brushed with gender essentialism a little bit, and I didn't always care for the men are this, women are this binary. I don't know, it's late, and I've had 3 glasses of wine. Maybe I'll amend this tomorrow. For now, 4 stars, because it's very accessible, and sometimes you need to record how toxic it was to be a young woman in the 2000s.
I picked a 3.5-star review. It doesn't totally match up with my thoughts, but I think it was written by someone who grew up in a more conservative household like I did and made some interesting points. It says, even though I'm only a little younger than the author, the experience she describes of learning how to exist as a woman is completely foreign to me. As I was reading, I kept saying, what about American Girl books? What about the Babysitter's Club? What about the Princess Diaries and Penelope and Nancy Drew? As a girl slash young woman in the 90s and 2000s, there was a world of experience that didn't make you loathe yourself or feel like you had to reshape yourself to please a man. I thought this was very interesting, but also very sad. It's almost like porn is a cancer. And I do think, like, I wasn't allowed to watch MTV, which, like, negates the first half of the book for me as an experience, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I understood all the, like, most of the references, but I think that's a fair point, is, like, if you didn't grow up in a pretty liberal household, you probably weren't engaging with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
My household is more liberal these days, but
I
grew up in a conservative Baptist household. I wouldn't say
my household was very conservative, but my mom definitely sheltered me from a lot of things. Yeah. Like, I wasn't allowed to watch SpongeBob, even if that tells you anything about my mother.
Well, I think a lot of kids our age, like, were, even some of the Nickelodeon shows, like, I wasn't supposed to watch Degrassi, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah. I wasn't supposed to watch Zoe 101 after she got pregnant.
Yeah.
She was a bad influence.
I mean, I grew up in a more conservative household, too. But I felt like my differences in the book is because this was written from more of like an elder millennial perspective, where you would have been more plugged in and less limited by your parents during this era. But that is one of the critiques I have of the book, is I actually felt like it left out a lot of media that was not doing this
the whole time. And we'll get there. But I was like, when are you going to mention Taylor Swift? When are you going to mention Taylor Swift? When are you going to mention Taylor Swift? And finally she did. I was like, thank you. That actually should have been a bigger note.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's still a salient point to refer to how much sexist media there was. Like, that was definitely the majority. But I did feel like, okay. And also making like the one exception or the one large commentary being Girls, I was like, okay, Girls wasn't the only show that was like, directed by women. Like,
and also, like, we grew up, it's Disney Channel kids watching really great female friendship shows. Like, I don't know. Like, there was, and we'll save most of this for later, but there was more negative than positive. And every once in a while, she'd just toss in, like, oh, yeah, but Taylor Swift did a good job at this. And I was like, she should have been a whole chapter.
Right.
Yeah. It felt like she was getting to a point where she was just like, oh yeah, like Taylor Swift and Girlhood, but then she would just drop the point. And I was just like, no, that's a huge part of this, and feeling like comfortable in Girlhood and staying Girlhood for like a long period of time.
Hell yeah. Where were the American Girl books?
Yeah, exactly. No, seriously.
That was a great point. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
The overall Goodreads rating is 3.9 out of 5. The Fable rating is 3.96 out of 5. And Storygraph is 3.95 out of 5. So not like in the fours like we usually read, but still pretty high for a nonfiction. Where did you guys fall?
I think it doesn't matter. I'll just go first. I gave the book 4 stars. I do feel like I'm kind of a critical 4. Like, I think for me, this book had parts of it that were really, really interesting and that I found really compelling. And then parts of it that I found a little bit more boring and a little bit more textbook-ish. I also think it is like a little bit more of a primer. Like, I don't think it would shock anyone listening to this podcast that like, this is not my first like intro to feminism. And so some of the points I was kind of like, yeah, girl, like you got to develop your argument a little bit past this. Like, you're not saying anything new. This is something people already know and acknowledge about pop culture and about media. So like, I think to be a great, you know, book, you have to push the conversation a little bit past where it already is. And I felt like that was not really done. However, the main part of the book that I found so interesting was how she kind of weaved in how porn has changed so much of media, and especially so much of how women actually see and portray themselves in media. And to me, that was like the one point in the book that I've just not really seen fully explored before anywhere else. And I thought it was really, really interesting. And so I think I gave the book a lot of credit for that. And I did still think it was good. It was just that I didn't necessarily always think it was like perfect or like, you know, super interesting and new.
Yeah. I'm in alignment with Casey. I also gave it 4, but it's a critical 4 because there were boring parts of this book. And sometimes I felt like it was a little repetitive in its nature. Especially because like it was supposed to be this like chronological study of like the 90s, aughts, and 2010s and 2020s.
Okay, if I saw the word aught one more time, I was going to like call her up and punch her in the face.
I know, seriously, right? But it was supposed to be this like chronological study, but we kept flipping time back and forth randomly. And so it was kind of hard to follow at times. And I think that she could have made the book a little more accessible to a general population. But I think I totally agree with the idea about pornography, because I feel like that is not really discussed of how it impacts women as much. We talk a lot in society about how porn and porn addictions have negatively impacted men and how it's kind of destroyed an entire population of young men and red-pilled them and made them absolutely crazy and violent towards women. But we never talk about how that impacts women and how porn can have like a negative impact of how women see themselves and how women enter into sexual relationships and enter into physical intimacy. And so that's where the part of the book that I was really fascinated by was how porn, even if women aren't like taking in or watching porn, how it can impact a general pop culture that women feel like they have to appease men and have to become this like ingenue of like
to perform
want and perform for them. Yes.
I was very critical of this book. I'm sorry. I give it 2 stars. I don't think there was a clear thesis. I thought it was super boring for 3/4 of the book. The most interesting part was the end. There was plenty of interesting stuff in there. I just don't think it flowed in a way that convinced me of anything. I also think books like this should have something like hopeful or next steps at the end, and there wasn't. It was just kind of like, hope we do better in the future. And I didn't like that. It was super boring. And also, the first 2 chapters should not have been the first 2 chapters because they were the least interesting, because she was referencing all these works of art and these porn films and stuff that I was like, I don't know the reference, but I can't look them up or my phone's going to flag me as a sex offender. I work for a school district. Can't be Googling these, you know? So I feel like she needed to like lure people in a little differently. Basically, if I had edited this book, I would have reorganized it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I had some issues with it. I literally fell asleep reading it. So while there was interesting things to think about, I think it's too close to the subject matter to adequately reflect backwards.
Yeah, I think those are fair points. I definitely didn't think it was a perfect book. And as we've already said, like, it felt like sometimes things were being left out.
Also, you realize like halfway through that she is English or British of some sort. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, okay, are you writing from an American perspective or a British perspective? And if you're writing as a worldly perspective, you're missing a whole lot of cultures in here.
Yeah, just very westernized culture.
Yeah, this is a book for white women. She tried to work in like how black women are sexualized in hip hop and things.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly this is for white women.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I read my review, is because I was like, oh, yeah. And like all the discussion about MLM culture, I was like, this is just a very white centric perspective. And I don't even think that's necessarily terrible, because pop culture was dominated by whiteness, like on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't feel like the book was necessarily always aware of itself in that manner.
There was a quote about like the women who are most stuck not breaking into the workforce. And it was like Mormons, moms, and
military wives.
Military wives. I was like, yeah, but that's what this book is for.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, let's get into our non-spoiler discussion. Our first question is more plot or character driven, which doesn't necessarily make this book.
I don't know. The author inserts herself often and says her editor told her to, but I was also like, get out. Every once in a while you'd be arguing all this stuff and then she'd be like, and I was doing blah blah blah. And I was like, what? Where'd you come from?
Yeah, I do think I've read. Okay, so I'm going to bring up Bad Feminist here, which was a very influential book in this era, actually. And that book is written by Roxane Gay, who is a Black feminist professor and like critic and writer. And I just bring that up because her Bad Feminist is also sort of like a critique of media in the early 2000s and like the portrayal of women in a lot of ways. But Gay does sort of the opposite of this and makes it very centric to her own experience. And so I thought about that a lot reading this book, because this book was so impersonal for the most part. And I just felt like
one or the other,
right? Like go one or the other. Like one of the reasons Bad Feminist was so successful is like Gay is a very compelling writer and had a lot of interesting things to say. And then this book, I felt like it seems like you don't have that much interesting things to say about your own experience here. Like just take yourself out or put yourself in.
Yeah, but
don't like,
clearly you were impacted by it and you're writing this book for a reason. So right. Tell us why.
Yeah, right. I felt like she was like scared of telling her own personal experience.
Yeah, like have you been held back in the workplace? Like what's, you know,
I mean,
like,
yeah, she's a journalist who has like who basically right, got into the like, job market.
Draw the connection to why this put you where you are as someone who grew up in this era.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe I'm making an overgeneralization of British people, but I feel like that's a very British thing to do is not talk about your own personal experience.
And also like, I don't think this book was necessarily supposed to have a thesis because it's supposed to just be like a chronicling of what happened. But then it's like, I think it should have had a thesis. I think just also setting out to chronicle media's portrayal of women is like too big of a task for a book that you probably want to keep under 250 pages, like, which is why a lot of things were left out. Like
it was more than 250 pages.
Right. Like, and so I felt like, you can write a short media criticism that has a thesis, or you can write a textbook that does not have a thesis, but evaluates kind of everything. And I felt like she fell sort of in between that marker as well. And that was like a little bit less satisfying to me.
Yeah. There were just also a few things she focused in on really hard, like girls and Madonna. And like, it was just really random. She'd get hyper fixated. I was like, tell me more about
Paris Hilton.
Why are you fixated on this?
And this is why I felt like I actually wanted more from her, because I was like, the reason you're fixating on these things is because of your own experience. And this is the media that influenced you the most, which is totally fair. I don't think that's wrong at all to do, but like, you should say that. You should explain that.
Focusing on that one rap group, I was like, I can't look up this song if it was banned from TV. I want to understand, but I do not.
Right. Okay. Well, second question, have you or would you read other books by the author?
Maybe.
I'm also a maybe. Depends on what she writes next.
I would. Like, to me, this book was short enough and I was interested enough in the topic that even though I had critiques, I'm still like ultimately glad I read it. I mean, I gave it 4 stars, so like I still liked it. And so I would be open to reading another book by her.
I think if she had written this even 5 years from now, I would have liked it better, because this story is so unfinished with the Trump presidency still being in place and the Epstein stuff happening. Like, she's leading up to all of that and then it just like leaves off because that's what
it actually like sort that. I'm glad you bring that up, actually, because it kind of bothered me, because there was so many things she was talking about that feel like are happening again, like the sort of like promotion of this nature. Like this Britney Spears kind of like girlishness, innocence, where you're like a teenager, but also a sex symbol at the same time. Like that's very much how our current pop stars are packaged for the most part. Like,
yes, like, okay, if you're going to mention current era stuff, mention how Sabrina Carpenter is using that to flip it on its head. Like, you know, like she's bringing it to the future, but not the stuff that I would have liked to hear about to the future. So like she needed to pick also like 90s and 2000s, you know?
Right. Or even like the current tradwife trend, like this stuff is all
briefly mentioned.
Right. It's yeah.
Okay. She blamed that on the Duggars. Okay. That was one sentence.
Yeah.
It was just too much to fit in the book. That's why I didn't like it, is because it was too many small touches on too many things.
But this is why it would have helped to have a thesis, because then she could have only focused on the things that like built or didn't build the thesis, instead of just being like an anthropological essay on everything that's happened.
An unfinished anthropological essay.
Yeah. That's why I just would have liked more hindsight, I think.
I mean, she was a journalist too, which is kind of funny because we're all journalists who learned at the same school. Like,
I write things like this in my head all the time.
Yeah. You know?
Like I am such a little sociologist in my head. I love thinking about this stuff, but like it's still happening.
But that's the thing, is that we learn solutions journalism, where you put a problem forth and then offer a solution. And that was not really given.
I need a solution. Well, most books that I read that are organized like this, I'll give an example. That's one you guys will probably never read, but It's The Making of Biblical Womanhood. A similar storyline, had an arc though, and essentially looked at how through the ages men wrote women out of the Bible with translation and all of that thing. I thought it was really interesting. It had a thesis and it said, here's how we can change things going forward.
Right.
It was like kind of boring in the middle, you know, there's a lot to just take in, but it had an arc.
Right. Okay. Well, next question. How was the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
Took me about a week, but it was a busy week. It's South by Southwest in Austin. I am a journalist in Austin, so therefore I have to cover South by Southwest.
Just too cool to be reading right now.
Period.
It took me like a week too. I think I read it in 3 sittings, most of it being like one sitting because I needed to get it done. It's not hard to read. It's just at some points, especially when the references don't connect as much. So like when they're older than I am, it's less engaging and harder to like really motivate myself. I got really interested at the end when it was kind of like more current stuff, MLMs, all that stuff, and the girl boss stuff. Like I got really interested there and it was way easier to read.
Right. I think I actually read this book pretty fast. I think it only took me 3 or 4 days. And I kind of just sat down after work for a few days and then just sort of like blew through it. Like, I don't know. I found it engaging enough that I was moving along the whole time. There were definitely slow parts, but it kept me reading. I wanted to finish it and I did. Hey, would you watch a movie or TV show with a book?
I mean, I'd watch a documentary. Yeah. If we could interview the people that were like DC. Impacted. Yeah. Like interview like Paris Hilton, interview Britney Spears.
Well, those interviews really already exist. You'd probably just have to pull pieces.
Yeah.
There is a documentary I watched, which actually I was going to make my recommendation at the end. It's called Misrepresentation.
Yes. Oh, that's such a good documentary.
Yeah, it's really good. But it is also essentially this book. Like the book is a little bit different and focuses on different things. But the whole time I was reading this, like even though I was enjoying it, I was kind of also like, probably be easier to just watch Misrepresentation.
It's a good documentary.
Yeah.
This would be a fun little pop culture documentary.
Yeah. And the thing
I
like,
there's a thesis and a conclusion.
So the thing that I liked about Misrepresentation that I think was missing here is it also talked about a lot more how pop culture women are often siloed into very specific archetypes. And there's very specific types of storylines that are available. Even if women are like portrayed as more quote unquote empowered, their stories often still follow a similar arc. Two stories where women are not portrayed as empowered. So that's something that I think also would have helped this book. So Misrepresentation provides a little bit more context for like, you know, how we got where we are.
Misrepresentation mention Pitch Perfect along with Bridesmaids because what an era.
Don't think so.
Misrepresentation is a little bit older at this point. So yeah. I'm not even sure Pitch Perfect was out.
Bridesmaids. I was like, where's Pitch Perfect? That should be in there too, but she's older than us.
Right. Okay. Well, busy girl reading?
I'm going to drop mine down to a 3 only because there's slow parts and it is kind of just like a textbook at times.
Mine to a 3.
Yeah. Well, I'm also going to drop mine to a 3. So we all agree. Busy girl's 3.
Yeah, but I do think it should be good reading for people.
Yeah, I found it thought-provoking, to be honest.
It would be an interesting, like, sociology or, like, feminist literature course, like college reading.
Yeah, women and gender studies.
That's what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. The title I couldn't think of.
Right. Okay, spoiler alert. I don't think we're going to spoil the early 2000s for anyone at this point, but we're going to get a little bit more into the book and what it talks about and how we felt about some of the analyses and the examples. So decide if you'd like to read the book and come back to us or listen on and we'll just tell you everything that happens.
I fell asleep reading this book and then I dreamed about 9/11. So
Jesus.
Just saying.
Okay, dark. Okay.
It was a dark book.
Yeah, it was.
I want to talk about the title of the book because this is a thought I kept having throughout the book. So it's called Girl on Girl, how pop culture turned a generation of women against themselves. That title was never supported. Yeah. I feel like the whole book, I was like, where's the girl on girl part? Where's the girl on girl part? This was about how women are stuck at a disadvantage because men control media. That's what it was about.
I think the part where it says how media turned women against themselves is supported in the book, just because I feel like the end parts of the book, she does talk about how media's portrayal of women impacts how women see themselves, and how women feel like they have to like push back against this portrayal of them, of themselves. And like, that was a big part of her analysis of girls, was Lena Dunham pushing back on like, or portraying at least how women feel like they have to act because of media. So I think it does partly, do I think it's like the strongest book ever, if that's what she was working towards? No, I think she could have added more and supported it better. I also don't like the title, simply because when I first heard of this book, I assumed it was about how media promotes ideas and depictions of women that make women feel like they have to compete with each other. I felt like this was about to be about,
that's
like,
what I expected too. And that's just, we never got there, really. Right.
I thought it was going to be about how women interact with each other,
yeah,
and how that's impacted by media. And that is not what the book is. And so I did think that, like, okay, I don't know that girl on girl is like the best title.
Well, it's supposed to be like
catching, because at first you're like, girl on girl. And then you read the subtitle, you're like, oh, less interesting.
Yeah. It's supposed to be a double entendre to be like,
I know she tried to explain that at the beginning and it was a poor explanation and should have been a thesis instead.
I agree that it was a poor explanation. But I do think it does capture in the sense of like the porn side of it, because she does go into that about how porn got more violent as society allowed more violence against women.
Yeah, that was interesting too, how she kind of blamed the war in Iraq for some of that.
Yeah.
There were lots of ideas and not all of them are connected.
Yeah.
Well, she, it's about the dehumanization of people.
Yes.
And how people were afraid and there was so much violence in the world that she felt like it made it easier to dehumanize women.
Yes. I don't know. There were a lot of good points. She just didn't connect them all together.
Yeah, I agree. It was a little disjointed.
Right. And I do think it's accurate that girls were turned against themselves.
Yes.
I think we see that a lot now, where like there's just been this huge rise in like consumerism and like beauty and skinniness. And
I think
all of it is very impressive.
Interesting. At the beginning, though, it was more about men are making art porn. And I think it should have had more commentary on Victoria's Secret and women dealing with eating disorders. That's you turning girls against themselves, that kind of thing. Like, or bullying in school when you don't have the right, you know, new coolest shirt or whatever from Hollister, you know, that kind of thing. That's more what I expected. And some of those were like, but she mentioned Victoria's Secret. But Victoria's Secret had a huge impact on people, millennials. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
And that would have been a good point on like, no, girls were starving themselves to look like Victoria's Secret angels.
Right. I mean, and Victoria's Secret is like a can of worms in which you can directly connect to Jeffrey Epstein and directly connect to all of that bullshittery. So, I mean, that could be its own book in itself. That's the reason why there's a docuseries.
It would have tied into the sexualizing younger models, you know, all of that. It would have tied, like, I feel like she was almost there. She was so close.
Well, yeah. I found it interesting because at the beginning of the book, I didn't realize that, like, because you think of like the Cindy Crawfords and you think of the like supermodels of like a certain era. I didn't directly connect that they were demanding more pay and more like rights in the workplace. And then they were just kicked out for the younger, more naive version that wouldn't get paid more. Like I had never connected that. That was interesting.
I appreciated the MTV is the reason pop stars got younger. you know.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to see older women on their TV screens. Okay. That was a great point.
Right. I do think older women being pushed out of the public sphere was probably one of my favorite points, in addition to the pornography point, because I watched the Cat's Eye documentary. Mm-hmm. And the Cat's Eye documentary has like a lot to say on this point, because not that those women aren't talented, but it basically shows you that these women, like, I shouldn't even call them women, like girls aged like 17 to 22 for the most part, were essentially recruited because they were abusable. Like, they needed to be hot, even though they're children, and they needed to just say yes to everything. Like, that group was formed by a group of men, K-pop organizing, you know, media executives. They were screened for quote unquote likability, which was a dog whistle for hot. And these men sat around and chose which girls got in the group, and they trained them for a year and never even told them that they were going to have to compete in a show for a spot.
Yeah.
And so like this whole point that like young women just accept things and don't stand up for themselves the way older women do. And I don't say that to be like, that wasn't me, because like, that was me, right? Like, you don't know when you're that young that you are.
No, that's a whole other discussion that we can go back to Jeanette McCurdy's memoir about. That's the parents' fault.
Right. And it's like Nickelodeon and the music industry, right? And MTV.
Nickelodeon should have been in the book.
Right. Because yes. They've all arrived.
I thought about, I was like, where's the Dan Schneider chapter?
Where's the toe sucking like Ariana Grande?
Where's the Amanda Bynes crazy break? Because they reference Lohan and Spears. Where's Amanda Bynes? Because that was it. Like, it
and
was
that she was an icon training. For children. Children. She was
sexualized by a grown man.
Yes.
Right. And so I thought that was a great point, because I feel like we're still in that. Mm-hmm. I think some artists are pushing back on it. Like you mentioned Sabrina Carpenter, who I think uses this aesthetic to undercut the message, as you said. But it's like our media is still dominated by children. And the reason it's dominated by children is because men want abusable stars, like who don't stand up for themselves, who don't ask for more money, who don't say no, and who don't call mm-hmm. bullshit on bad sexist mistreatment. Like, and so I thought that was a great point, because I was like, that still happens all the time.
And I would have liked more on why can't women get into media roles? You know, like right. Where, what glass ceiling needs shattered in media management for women to be more in the picture? You know, like, I feel like that was something that was like, men are in control. And it was never like, why?
Right.
And I think it's so funny, because you see in this book, the switch gets flipped for the consumerism side of it, where people realize, women are more of a percentage of the population. And they're also more of the spending power of the household. They are the ones that spend the most money on shit. Maybe we should target things to them. And I'm like, then why wouldn't you have a woman in charge of your consumerism and in charge of your company? Because they know a woman's mind, and that will sell you more goods. Like, it's never but totally.
She made the point that when there were women in charge, stuff was still bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like, I think the other thing that was connected well in this book is the fact that like, okay, recruiting child stars, right? Like when you're 17, your body's different than when you're 30. And this is actually a way to basically promote eating disorders. Like mm-hmm. if all your stars are super thin, prepubescent girls that you then set the beauty standard, you've now set a beauty standard that's totally unachievable for most women. And so now that feeds capitalism, because now women have to buy products, have to starve themselves. If you're starving yourself, I read a really good analysis a long time ago about how thinness becomes more attractive after women have made civil rights progress. Because if you are starving yourself, you're not mobilizing. You don't love yourself. Like, you're not empowered, you know? And I don't mean that in a like judgmental way, because I think we all understand what that pressure to be thin feels like. But this book does connect, right? Like, all these things are kind of making each other worse. Like,
right.
These child stars don't say no. They promote eating disorders and like consumerism culture. And then they just all right. feed each other.
Excellent chapter about the Kardashians. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. how Instagram, you know, etc. Totally missed the whole thing that Khloe was always called the fat Kardashian and had to go dieting and all this. I'm like, you yep. forgot to talk about the most important part, is that like her own family was a hard influence on her.
and was called fat by the public to point that she was doing like very, she has OCD now.
When are you talking about Chloe? When are you talking about Chloe? And then she hosted a show called Revenge Body.
I do think something that is touched on in the book that could have been hit a lot harder is how this treatment of women by media has destroyed the women who even are in the system. Like you're saying, like the Kardashians.
It talked about Britney and it talked about, but like,
but there's so many more examples.
And what happens after, you know, like Lindsay Lohan's back in the picture doing better. Britney Spears, I don't know about her, but her sister's fine now. You know, like where is that? I don't know. So the next question is, what did you think of the chronology of the book? And it kind of starts with the Riot Girls in the 90s and moves on. I would have liked it better if she wasn't trying to do like this era and this art form, this era and this art form. I would have liked it to just start in the 90s and work through it. Then you could have worked in the Nickelodeon hit, the MTV hit, and just kind of float it all into each other instead of trying to prove this point and then this point. Like,
I agree.
It's all connected. I would have liked it better if it, like, I liked chronological, just not then sectioned off into art form.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned in the,
like, I don't care about the paintings hung in whatever. Most people who are experiencing pop culture aren't going to see these weird photography exhibits.
Yeah, I will say that that's what I mentioned in like the non-spoiler section, is that the chronology, we felt like we were supposed to be chronological, but we kept flipping back and forth to where the timing just got really confusing suddenly because we were trying to do art form chronology. I agree. I think if we just start in the 90s, go 90, 95, 95, like, and make it like each chapter is that time period, and like you section head it to each like thing that you want to touch on of that period. I don't know. I think that the book was a little flip floppy and a little like all over the place at times because it wasn't following the chronology as accurately as it says it was doing.
It was trying to do two things at once and it should have just done one.
Also, there were points when I felt like she was just talking about art or films and like had left pop culture.
Yes.
Like there is specifically the part of the book where she talks about how like pornography has impacted women's own perception and portrayal of themselves, where she was talking about these like art films that I was like, I've never heard of this. Like, respectfully, like, I'm not saying they don't demonstrate a point, but they're not pop culture. Like, you know, like you've left your thesis.
And referencing these certain music videos, these certain porn films, I'm like, your average middle class white woman is not watching that.
Right.
They're not actually affect, like they may affect other things that then eventually affect these people you're writing about, but those aren't directly the reason women feel more sexually liberated. Madonna, yes. Random ass porn film, art film, no.
Yes. And I do think that there, you could have done the porn industry, like the big hits. Like I knew some of like the porn actors that they were talking about just because I like saw in the newspapers about them sexually abusing people and all that. Like hardcore, I knew about that one because I had watched a documentary with him in it. But I think going so in the weeds didn't help the situation because I think you could have said there were things out there in which women were being treated essentially just like a body in which to fuck and were being abused. And that has caused that to be normalized, has allowed for the Nickelodeons of the world to normalize sexualization of children and the barely legal section in the tabs, and how that's like the number one tab on porn websites is barely legal, has allowed for the sexualization and fetishization of young teenage girls. I mean, I think we all had experiences as young adults in which grown ass men in their 40s were catcalling us when we were like 12, 13. Because I remember that when I was like 11, when I was with my mom, and my mom was just like, if that ever happens to you, you run in the opposite direction.
Yeah. There have been studies that show that women are most catcalled around the age of 15. So it's not adult women, right? I mean, it can be still, but it's like teenagers that men feel like they can treat this way.
Yep. I do feel like at some points she was so knowledgeable on a topic, she was just listing things.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Another list. Oh, there's a list. There's a list. So, yeah, I would have liked it to be more this, then this, not just like And let me take a moment to pause and list all the dirty rap songs I know. You know, like,
right.
It was interesting. And I do want to touch on, while we're talking about, like, the pornography and how that maybe led to more violence against women and normalizing that. I thought this was interesting, and I kind of, like, half got where she was going, but then she kind of went on this tangent about women who use that to their advantage and, like, liked being abused on camera and liked this stuff. And I was like, what am I supposed to get from this part?
Yeah.
Like, I understand sex is a currency.
Right.
But I felt like, what do you think she was trying to prove through this?
I remember that tangent too. And I was kind of like, I don't know what this has to do with, like, the overall impact on the way women are treated and women in media, because I think it is a salient point that women cope with what they feel they're able to do and the lanes that are available to them differently. And, like, not every woman, like, hates, you know, that kind of sex, but I did feel a little bit like,
I feel like she negated her point a little bit.
Yeah. And it was also like, some women wanting to perform that way doesn't have anything to do with the way it has negatively impacted women overall. And, like, the limiting.
Right. You're not talking about the little girls getting catcalled on the street because of this. You're like, and then some ladies like this power. And I was like, what?
Yeah. It felt like, I hate to say victim blaming a bit, but it did feel a little victim blamey.
Like, your average woman is not a porn star. So, like, what's this doing for the average woman?
Yeah. Like, I feel like you can mention that women were honestly, like, securing their bag is the best way to describe it. Like, I have no judgment for those women because they are playing into a system and winning the system. They're winning the game. Do I hate that that's the game? Yes. Why are we focusing on these women when we need to focus on the men in power and the power structure in which this system is in place? Like, that's where I have problems.
Right. And the greater, more important point is that this treatment of women online has formed the basis for what many young men think sex is. And that has hurt both young men and young women who feel like they have to exist in this cultural dynamic.
And I do think, I appreciate this book that it was very focused on women and not focused on young men, because I think we've had enough sort of, like, psychologically sociological studies about how young men are failing in the male loneliness epidemic and how porn is figured into that. And yes, I do agree with that, but we are focusing so hard on this that I'm just like, but what about the women? Like, how, like, why aren't we focusing on women here? Like, why is everything about young men and how they're failing? What's the metric for them failing? Is it that women are doing better? Is that the metric you're comparing to? Because that's not a metric you can compare it to. Just because women are thriving doesn't mean men fail. But I do think that she focused so much on these women, like, playing into the system, and didn't focus enough on incels. And I think incels and incel culture is a huge thing that you need to focus on in this.
And that's where I think she started a direction I thought was interesting about, you know, like, now everybody has their own camera in their home and the evolution of cam girls and OnlyFans. But I'm like, okay, you're mentioning the celebrities who are doing this. You forgot to mention Snapchat and how little girls are being, you know, encouraged to do this.
I was shocked Snapchat was never in this book.
Yeah.
Snapchat is like, formed a foundational basis for, like, young girls sending nudes of themselves. Like,
and
Snapchat,
like, clearly she's older because she's talking about Instagram, which, yes, is the influencer culture. But yeah, kind of forgot what is actually, like, kind of the more sex currency.
The insidious one.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So what did you think of the book's critical review of 2000s popular TV and movies?
I guess this shows my age because, like, I didn't watch any of the movies mentioned.
No, I hadn't seen any of them.
I am a young millennial and I haven't seen most of them except, like, Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
I had heard of all of them, at least, I think, or almost all of them.
I'd heard of most of them. It was when we were in the hip hop stuff that I was like, no idea. And the photography stuff, I was like, no idea.
Yeah.
The movies I mostly got, and a lot of the the pop music I knew.
Right. I think another point that I really liked in the book was just the like gleeful way women were exposed and degraded in media, like specifically tabloids and magazines, and on social media later, especially on Snapchat. Like they had like the MTV and like Daily Mail snap stories that were like,
I like the blame the paparazzi section. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because that's actually one of my earliest memories of pop culture is looking at magazines in like the grocery store aisle and how
J17.
How vile they found women. Like even as a child, I remember thinking that like the way women were treated was like very harsh.
I mean, I remember headlines that said like fat whore and slut in the grocery aisle.
Well, another big missed opportunity, the brief mention of Princess Diana without going into how paparazzi harassed her and how that affected culture so greatly.
Right. And like the upskirt shots of girls, I thought was a great point about how like magazines were literally publishing like photos of stars that were like not even 18 years old yet. I thought that was a good point, though not holistic necessarily. And then we got into like the actual movies part of it. And that one I thought was a little bit less like tight argumentatively, like because she focuses a lot on these bro movies, which don't get me wrong, they're disgusting. I think they're still disgusting and like very sexist. But I felt like she almost made it seem like those movies were pop culture when movies and pop culture were a lot broader than that. And I think like picking the most sexist, problematic type of movie in pop culture was not necessarily like a holistic argument about how all pop culture and movies were portraying women.
Like not everyone was watching The Hangover. Okay.
Right. Like I
agree watching Marvel movies and Disney movies.
Right. And I agree that those movies are very sexist, but like a lot of Marvel movies were sexist. Like a lot of other types of movies were sexist too.
The Hangover dumb like 90% of the time, but it's also really funny like 10% of the time. I'm sorry. It got me.
And so I just wish that she didn't only talk about that kind of movie. Like there were lots of movies that were popular that were sexist and also, that probably had more of an effect on women because women were watching them more.
Since we made it all the way to 2025 in the book, huge swing and a miss for not mentioning Barbie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole time I was like, just watch Barbie. Just watch Barbie. Just watch the monologue in Barbie.
Yep. Right. Literally. I mean, I did like the kind of breakdown of American Pie. I've never watched it, but the idea of like how virginity was talked about in these movies and how like men, it was like a desperation to lose their virginity and it was like a rite of social passage while the women were treated as kind of the gatekeepers of this.
You were either a whore or a prude. You were never anything else.
Yeah, I did like that discussion because like, I mean, I remember in high school, I remember in middle school, that was talked about. It was like the virginity, like it was like this rite of passage that like everyone has to go through. And it felt very pressurized and very non-consensual at times. It really just felt like a pressure cooker. And I think that that's a huge part of the American culture is sex, which is really unfortunate because like these are kids we're talking about. And I definitely remember there was a lot of like boys putting pressure on women to have sex that should not have ever happened.
And I think that's where she could have brought in this more worldly perspective instead of just jumping between England and the US. Like sex was more of a currency in like France and some of these other places before the US got promiscuous, you know, like I feel like that's where you could have connected it to a larger scale is just like I don't know if it's like the U.S. wasn't always promiscuous. The U.S. used to be pretty conservative.
Mm-hmm. I did think I liked that she pointed out that like some of these male directors were trying to show women in a more complex way and were still ultimately failing because like I think media still struggles to show women and men as people who may want to have sex just for their own enjoyment. And I think she does educate the point that in these movies, if women are still ultimately just shown as like the withholders of sex, then their whole like character is still about not doing something or doing something with a man instead of just being like a sexual being in her own right, who might be making a decision just based off of like pleasure and enjoyment and like engaging in a healthy relationship, right? Like, instead of just being like, this is all about men getting something or not getting something. Then,
even the like art films by women she referenced, it felt like she was saying they still did it wrong.
Yeah.
So, but also like, I do think you have to sort of take into account, this is very minor side thing, but like, sex, just to have sex and enjoy it is not a plot, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, movies have plots. So I get where, yes, there could be more, but like, I don't know, part of it is that's not exciting. That's not a story, you know? Should the representation be there? Yes.
Right. Like, men's whole coming of age shouldn't be depicted as whether or not they're having sex.
No.
Period. Like, because then you are setting up men to be violent with the women in their age. If they believe the only thing they can do to get value and to grow up is to have sex, then like, now you're giving them incentive to just be gross with the women that they know, like, who may not want to have sex. And are, this is the whole like incel mentality, is that like, you have to get something from women, and if women are withholding it, they're doing it out of spite. Like, because, and you know, making everything about that was a huge function of these movies. I think
everybody should watch The Beauty that's on right now on Hulu. The guy who made like Glee and Scream Queens and stuff, he's the producer. So much of the stuff that was touched on this is like the theme of the show. It's about, and it like, it starts with like an incel masturbating in his basement who gets talked to into like trying the beauty so he can be attractive so women will want him, and then he realizes once he gets there it still sucks and he kind of becomes evil, and like, it's this drug, everybody wants it, it's totally like a loosely veiled like talk on like Ozempic and stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, there's all these harmful things, how they permeate culture and stuff, like it starts to get into it, and it's so interesting because it is like summing up so much of what's happening in like this book. And I think it's like the best current critique on pop culture right now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Okay. Now, this was a huge part of the book for me that I found very interesting because I love reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
What this did was you
guys, the best part.
What did you guys think of the book's review of 2000s TV and sexism and consumerism?
I did know that reality TV spawned from the writer's strike. I did know that. And that's why we have reality TV and like Cops and stuff like that. And they realized, oh, we can make money without writers. Great. It was a really big fuck you to the Writers Guild. I was waiting for them to mention the swan because I was like, this is my one tidbit of knowledge that I have about this really, really gross reality TV show about plastic surgery. I knew about that one.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that, but I knew about the Khloe Kardashian one.
Yeah. The swan is horrifying, and I know about it only because of, I think, like a documentary.
Well, excellent mention of The Simple Life, even though I was too young to be watching that. I know how effective that was. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, the Kardashians, media empire, from just knowing the right place at the right time and maybe strategically placing a sex tape. You know, really interesting how that
maybe
unconfirmed. But interesting how, like, once again, sex is power. But I especially liked the housewives mention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The housewives are such a long-running franchise, and it is about these women who are badasses in their own right. Yes, it's dramatic. Yes, it's silly, but these women don't actually need their men, you know, like,
and most of them divorce them.
Right. So like, yes. And it's so funny to call them a housewife when most of them, like she talks about in the books, are side hustling and starting their own businesses and leveraging this. They're not just housewives, you know,
and so half of them are not married anymore.
Right. It was a great mention.
Mm-hmm.
But then it kind of lost steam.
Yeah. I also did really like this. I wish she had actually hit the Kardashians a little bit harder, because I love to watch reality TV with like a sociological perspective. Because I think
I call it like going to the zoo, watching.
Yeah. It's a people zoo. It's
really interesting. Like, it says so much about who we are as a culture, because reality TV is very reflective of like the most extreme natures of like being an it girl and a hot girl. Like, that's who's on reality TV. And I felt like I liked that she mentioned that reality TV is set up to basically like enforce the gender binary. Like it's men who are like extreme examples of masculine ideas, women who are extreme examples of feminine ideas, and like how toxic that is to like reinforce that, like, this is how you're supposed to act. This is how you are supposed to act if you want to be hot and successful.
Right now, Love is Blind and Love Island.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
But I love it.
Which but love is not blind.
Right. But just like you watch all these people that just behave like idiots. And I think the point that I also liked that I wish it hit a little harder is that like most of these people aren't idiots. Like the Kardashians are not idiots, despite the fact that they behave like they're dumb on reality TV. Like
Kim is a marketing genius.
Exactly. Like
Paris Hilton's really smart.
And right. then like randomly accusing them of blackfishing and then moving on. I was like,
and then just not getting into that ever again. Yeah. Okay. And so I just wish that like she talked more about how that is harmful, but also how it is a mirage. And she gets into it a little bit with like the girl boss culture later. Mm-hmm. Because then women basically like, we're like, no, we can be successful. We can do what men do. But like by being successful and doing what men do, they actually meant like continuing to profit off of making other women insecure and like
using right that was more of the girl on girl finally
right.
But then you also throw in like random mentions of the Duggars and I was like, wait, now you're sidetracked again.
Right.
Yeah,
trad white culture. Like put Duggars. Women in the kitchen, so like yeah, you could have worked it in. That was a huge reality TV moment. You mentioned Big Brother, but you didn't mention like Survivor, another huge, you know, you could have gone in harder on American Idol. Mm-hmm. Because that was a big thing. Everyone wanted to be Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood.
Right.
I don't know. Like that would have fit into diet culture and stuff too. Like Kelly Clarkson would have been a huge commentary on that.
Right. And she gets into it a little later with some stars, like, because this is sort of where she then gets to the mental breaks of so many women that we grew up watching. And I also really like this point because I don't think I've ever read someone specifically point out that these breakouts or mental breaks they were having were specifically because of the immense pressure they were feeling because of the paparazzi and the media coverage of them being so like violently negative and pursuing them in such like dehumanizing ways.
Mm-hmm. Also interesting to mention Britney Spears's break without mentioning Justin Timberlake.
Yes. I was like, where is Justin Timberlake in this novel? Like,
well, the fact that we mentioned Janet Jackson's nip slip and still mentioned Justin Timberlake. Timberlake, he was the one that caused it.
Like toxic men also, like it wasn't just the media. It was also toxic male celebrities.
Mm-hmm. Right. Who were feeding off of that and using
he
that.
You mentioned Diddy, you know, like Justin's clearly not as bad as Diddy, but.
Right. But he still like put her down and like. Basically said she was a whore. Like right. He was,
and she made an interesting point at one point early on about how many of the female hip hop artists, Lil Kim and all them, were tied to a bigger production by a male artist. Mm-hmm. And it's like more of that, how like some of it is artist on artist,
right? And like to be successful, these women still had to cater to men in some ways, which is part of why they were so sexualized.
Yes.
And
it's still never talked about why there are no women controlling media.
Right. That's actually something I thought about a lot after reading this book, because at this point I do feel like there's enough successful women that we should stop having to ask permission for this stuff. Like we can put out our own stuff. Like why are
and
we still doing
it? I think she tried to work in the Hillary stuff, but it was kind of weird.
I thought the mention of Hillary Clinton was a little awkward to begin with. Like
not a likable person. Now, talking about how Sarah Palin capitalized and went into reality TV. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
But Hillary, despite being like women root for women, is not like the most universally liked woman to use it as an example.
And not mentioning Bill Clinton and Monica. Correct.
Yes. Her husband is a rapist. It's crazy to be talking about Hillary Clinton's concession speech as if this is like the peak disappointing moment of feminism.
No, when Hillary really like, where's the Monica Lewinsky mention?
Yes. When she stood by her husband through abusing an underage intern through.
Not underage, but young. She was 25. Okay.
She was like standards. 22 when it started.
That's true. I think still not underage, but yes.
Yeah. Because Monica Lewinsky, I think, yeah, I imagine that. I thought that she had started interning in high school, but the affair didn't start till she was of age. But anyway. And multiple rape accusations.
Yeah.
Don't act like a woman who stood by her man through multiple rape accusations is like peak feminist. Texting
accusations.
Yeah. Like, oh, let's all cry because Hillary Clinton didn't win. Like, girl.
Right. And also, if you wanted to talk politics, why don't you talk about how in the Obama era, which you glorified in this book, Michelle Obama was one of the most visibly present females in the White House, like ever.
Yes. And people
was having children eat healthy, yes, and was like body image queen.
Yes. I felt like I enjoyed the Sarah Palin commentary, but I did want, I was like, what about Michelle Obama, who was the first Black woman president, and the media portrayal of her was disgusting at some point.
Still yes. is.
And I even mean,
like, yes, literally
disgusting.
Putting her face on a gorilla.
And yes. even Hillary so
that's
Clinton,
where I was like, okay. The politics thing, that's a whole other book. You need to swerve back into the pop culture, I think.
Right.
I think that was her trying to like find one woman in power that everybody knows. Which maybe is tragic that like you have to think as far as like the presidency to name a woman who is doing that.
And she is correct in the sense of like the same time that Britney Spears was having a mental breakdown, Hillary Clinton was running for president. That is true. That two
those
things can happen.
Not the same time period. When I was reading that, I was like, oh my God, it was. Yeah.
And yeah. so you're seeing these women break down and people are asking the question, what happens when a woman would break down in the White House? And I'm like a man
think
has.
That's the reason she lost.
No, I don't think that's the reason she lost. But that is.
She alludes to that. And I'm like, that's not right. Sure. Correlation and causation are not the same thing.
Yes.
Because I would argue that presidential campaigns are pop culture because they're some of the few
yes.
political events that truly capture.
But like. Talk about the pussy hats. Don't talk about whatever you were talking about.
Also, I even felt like the discussion of Hillary Clinton was underdeveloped because in that election, it was very much portrayed like Sarah Palin is the slut, the dumb slut, and Hillary Clinton is the shrew, the sort of evil, emotionless, cold bitch.
The nasty
and,
woman.
Well, right. They kept talking about Sarah Palin. Like she kind of briefly mentioned Sarah Palin, the fact that she hadn't hit menopause yet. And so she her youngness. And I feel like that's a huge issue that wasn't covered in this book is the treatment of postmenopausal women in society and in America. Because like my mom has fully told me on times where she's like, the day I like my hair went gray and the day that like I obviously showed that I was postmenopausal was the day that society has made me invisible. Like people don't see me. People treat me like I am not there. I'm cut at grocery store lines. I'm treated like I'm not a person anymore because I can no longer produce children. And I feel like that's a part of this book that should have been talked about because women are pushed out of pop culture once they hit a certain age.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know what age this book was targeted at, quite frankly.
Elder millennials,
right? I guess 40-year-olds.
Yeah, because I mean,
that,
we don't talk
you're
about,
right. If it is 40-year-olds, they're approaching that time period in their lives. You should probably mention it.
Yeah, sure. Like they don't talk about the wild, wild west of the internet and the fact that kids had access to way too graphic things.
Well, that's where I thought about a few times the anxious generation. I was like, these were the kids who grew up in the wild west with no rules. You know, we had a few more rules at our age when it came to the internet. So that's why they were exposed to so much because there was no filter. It was happening so fast. And that just like wasn't talked about either.
Right. Okay. So I don't know if you guys have anything else to say about the girl boss chapter, but that
that's
is
like gatekeep girl boss.
Yeah. Right. I do think she did a good job of showing that like women just learn to like be as abusive and capitalistic. And that's not necessarily empowerment because I think that's still a problem in our current discussion of feminism and pop culture is like. And she uses the quote, which I love and I can never say correctly, but like, can the master's tools dismantle the master's house?
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like, no, right? Like you can't just become a capitalist and that's feminism. Right.
You can't destroy a thing from the inside.
I would have liked more on Instagram and social media because that's where we're at now.
Right.
That's where feminism in whatever form, multiple forms lives now is on social media.
I'm glad that there was the mention of Lean In because there were so many people that were like, just ask for more. Like my dad even said that to me once where it's just like, yeah, you just have to go in and ask for a raise. And I'm like, yeah, to be called a bitch and a hoe for doing that? No.
Right. Right. And it is like, I don't know. I like that she kind of pointed out how feminism has actually morphed into like, you're not able to criticize the choices of another woman, even if they hurt other women.
A conversation I tried to have with my boss last week, who is a man, who is a great supportive man, who understands I need a woman mentor too, has said that in the past, by the way.
Yeah.
But I was like, it was like, I'm young. I'm one of the youngest people in my building. And it was a conversation. I was like, how do I get people to take me more seriously without sounding like a bitch?
Yeah.
Like, that's literally something I said to my boss.
It's something we probably all have thought about.
Yeah.
He did not have a good answer, of course, because he's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Being
he
a woman.
Say, I don't know. But like, I didn't expect a good answer.
Right. Women are just inherently treated as if we're unserious.
And I'm young. So.
Right.
Strike two.
Exactly.
And I'm nice. Strike three.
You're
out.
You're going to get pushed over. It's fine.
I don't know. Like, it happens. It's just built in the culture. And that's why I wanted something at the end. It's like, how do we unbuild it? Like you said, we can't do it from the inside. How do we do it?
You can't destroy something from the inside. You have to do it for a full dismantle and rebuild.
Yeah.
How? I mean, that brings us to the ending because the author doesn't really offer many off ramps.
Where she said it's about men loving women.
I honestly don't remember that.
Yeah.
She was talking about the way for women to get power is to be loved and cherished by men. Well, essentially.
That wasn't quite it. It was more of like when men love women and respect them, the whole society allows for women advancements.
Right. Okay. So how are we supposed to make that happen? You know, there are plenty of good men out there. Our dads are great people, you know, but like.
Okay, hold on. My dad's a great dad. I don't know that he's like a great feminist.
No, I'm not saying they love their wives.
Right.
And but want them to have rights.
Right. But like, wives that didn't change the world.
Loving your wives doesn't equate to understanding structural.
Correct. Things. That's why I'm correct. Saying that was a stupid point in the book.
Yes. Yeah. I do think a lot of men don't like women. And I think that's a cultural problem. As far as girls go, I honestly really do believe that young women just need to get off social media.
Yeah.
Because, and here I'm going to really sound like a boomer, but I really do believe that influencer culture has been really bad for young women, not just in promoting like mindless capitalism and like self-hatred, but also just promoting a like really vapid picture of what life should be and like your relationships with other people. Like, I just feel like everything women consume on social media drives them to want to be this it girl, which is really just a woman who is like has expensive clothes, has a hot boyfriend, and is skinny. And I think we have failed to put something forward in the internet that is more meaningful. I think those depictions exist in movies and in books, but I think so many women, young women's lives are run by social media. And I think their attachment to that vision is very problematic.
Oh, I'm all about banning social media for like under 16 or 18, which I think Australia is like trying to do now.
Australia did do it. You have to have a photo ID.
I work in schools. I watch trends run through like wildfire, and I watch the kids who can't keep up.
Right.
And it's sad. Like, you see it happening. You can watch it. And I can be like, I remember that. And it hasn't changed. So, yes, I'm all about, you know, I grew up half in the social media era, half not, you know. Mm-hmm. My childhood was so much happier. Mm-hmm. I did so much more fun stuff before social media existed.
Right. And I think it trains women to reach for that instead of thinking more about their own dreams and ideas.
Thinking critically.
Yeah. Well, it trains them to be a consumer and to be
submissive. Mm-hmm. Like, it floods your brain.
Yeah. Right. And I had this like crisis of thought the other day when someone at my church who was like a leader to me when I was a kid said to me, because I love Instagram, I only follow people I know in like small businesses. That's what I try to see. And I personally only post like when I travel and stuff, when I'm doing interesting things. And she said, wow, you had just such a fun year. And I was like, it was the worst year of my life.
You're not seeing it all.
Right, like, yeah, on paper, I had a great year. I did a lot of fun things. I really did. But there was so much going on behind the scenes that no one sees.
Right.
And that's where I'm like, am I the toxic social media presence? Like, obviously not. But I had this thought, like,
right.
I don't know. How do you like be like, hey, I'm sad? Like, you don't, you know, like social media is just toxic inherently because you're only seeing one side of things.
Yeah. And you're seeing the best parts.
I read a really good media criticism the other day about how your brain can't actually distinguish between reality and what you're seeing online. Like, your brain is not able to separate out things that are falsities, even if you know realistically they're false, which I think is another point that probably should have been brought up in this book, because I think she tries to make it that
there's not enough social media in the book.
Right. No. Also, like, movies and books do create reality and do create and form the basis of people's idea of reality.
And like your tiny mention that Facebook was created to rate girls. Excuse me. Right. Expand.
Right. And I think that idea, the criticism I read was talking about how now teenagers actually see the way they present themselves online as more real as who they are in real life. And I think that is just so toxic. Like, people genuinely live for the online presence rather than actual experiences and relationships in real life.
Kids do not touch grass anymore. All they care about is making clicks and likes. And it is horrifying. And we need to stop it.
Well,
we need
to get off. All kids are on all the time still somehow is Snapchat.
Yes. Which is crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know if that would really work, but I really believe that we need to get young women on social media.
And we need to get everyone.
Yeah.
Young men too.
Right. Honestly, even adults. Like, every person in America.
Young men might be less incel-ish if they were off.
Yes.
Right. Like, probably every adult in America should be using social media less than they are now.
100%.
And I'm hoping. We all say as it's our literal job.
Yeah.
It's our literal job.
Like, I don't want to be on it a lot of times when I come home because it is my job.
I don't have the apps on my phone anymore because I just don't want to look at them.
And there are some improvements where there is literal lawsuits where a young girl who all we know is her initials is suing Meta, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, all of them for intentional infliction of emotional distress. Like, she is suing because she has mental health problems and body dysmorphia because of these apps. And she's trying to prove that these apps caused it and therefore should be held accountable for it. So we are seeing, like, current day court cases happening in this.
Oh,
yeah.
That's why I think this is an unfinished book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
She could write, you know, 12 more volumes on it.
Right. All right. Well, do you guys have recommendations?
Girl dinner.
I'm glad my mom died.
Right. I'm going to recommend movies. So I already brought up Misrepresentation. I also, on the porn topic, watched, it's both a full-length documentary and a documentary series, but it's called Hot Girls Wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It's really, really good. And it goes behind the scenes of porn and how porn is really about abusing women, basically. So... Mm-hmm. And creating a package and a product that is inherently and purposefully abusive. So yeah.
Yeah. I'd say Girl Dinner because that was a fun book that was way more on the sociological side of things and had a lot of these points in there about what is even feminism anymore.
Right.
And as all girls have to look forward to is a little snack at dinner time, you know? Mm-hmm. So I like Girl Dinner. I also mentioned the TV show The Beauty. I will mention it again. It's like a perfect kind of horror depiction of our current era.
Right.
It's kind of gross sometimes, guys. Warning. Trigger warning.
Trigger warning. Okay. Well, catch us.
The first scene is Bella Hadid exploding.
Oh, God.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'd love to hear more of y'all's thoughts at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. You can see more of our recommendations at busygirlspod.com. And please rate and review our podcast if you have anything to say. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.